Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boerter. What's up, Mark Boerter? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm ready for her to discuss all the overreactions from week one. So let's do this.
You're ready. Sound like you're ready for a big volleyball game, huh?
I am. Are you ready for this volleyball game? You going to go?
Well, I've got seventh grade volleyball tonight. I'm entering your world now because the girls have played nothing but basketball, and Julia runs track. And so now Miss Selena has decided volleyball is something. So we're going through basketball and volleyball at the same time, which is a daunting task. But tonight's her first volleyball game. So you have to give me some tips about being a volleyball dad, Mark.
I can certainly do that. I can certainly do that. And if, you know, they would like to transfer to a school down south here, I happen to know a head coach somewhere.
Whoa.
You know.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
Just throwing it out there.
Pulling strings.
Wow. Maybe I can get her to give a few tips to this young lady of mine.
That might work.
You're the man, though. But volleyball, that's starting. I'm trying to get educated and prepared for it. You know what I mean? So that's.
I hear you.
You go all over the place, don't you?
Yeah, we are all over the place usually. And I'm sure people are probably like, "What the heck are we talking about right now?" But
there's a lot more. There's a lot more dads out there.
There's a lot more volleyball dads out there. But in reference to what Stephen and I are originally talking about, my wife is the head volleyball coach at Notre Dame DeSion High School, and they happen to play St. Pius tonight. So,
who's the better athlete, you or her?
Me, of course.
Wow.
But when it comes to volleyball, certainly not.
Who would win in a foot race nowadays?
I would win in a foot race, yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
She's had
like four knee surgeries, right knee over time from high school on. So,
what about you? Are you in game shape? What are we looking at?
I'm not. My back is actually locked up pretty bad over the last. Started actually before the Chiefs game.
Back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or
spinal?
Yeah.
Spinal.
You got to make sure that's not spinal. So
it is. It is spinal. I'll be all right. I'll be all right. It's, you know, old athlete problems, and
right.
I stood a course for the entire Chiefs game at Arrowhead on Sunday. So went and got a little rehab on it yesterday, and trying to take it easy. But other than that, I'm fantastic.
Hey, we got your back. Did you stay up and watch the end of the Raiders and Ravens game last night?
I did. I stayed up to watch the rest of it.
So, my first question is, what the hell were the Ravens doing defensively at the end of regulation that allowed the Raiders to get into field goal territory with two plays? It just... What was that?
I don't know, Stephen. I was kind of baffled myself. So I'm glad you asked me that question because, you know, we know the Raiders and Wink Martindale like to bring a lot of pressure, but they went a lot of zero coverage down the stretch, or, you know, cover one free type of thing, and just allowed the Raiders to, you know. Look, you say what you want about the Raiders, but they've got speed on offense, right? They have speed and obviously a really good tight end. And, you know, I didn't feel like Baltimore put their defenders in a really good situation whatsoever down the stretch. And then, you know, there was good coverage on the big play in overtime, that they thought was going to be the game-winning score, right? The first possession of overtime for the Raiders, that was actually decent coverage. And a good ball thrown by Carr, but I was really confused as to what was happening for sure. I think they were trying to force Derek Carr, into some mistakes, and he just really didn't make them last night.
everyone knew what defense they were in, what was going to happen in that last play. Did you watch? Were you watching the regular broadcast or the Manning cast?
I watched the regular broadcast. I flipped over to the Manning cast a little bit. Was following along on Twitter on it. It's something I certainly will tune into at some point. I'm not a huge Ray Lewis fan, so when I flipped over, Ray was on at the time, and so I flipped back over. I enjoy listening to Lewis Riddick a lot on the Monday Night Broadcast.
Me too.
I think he's a tremendous talent and offers really, as a football guy, offers really, really good insight, to the game and very knowledgeable. So I Greasy's okay. Not that I'm sitting here critiquing announcers right now, but I love listening to Lewis Riddick. I always have, and so I enjoy listening to him analyze the game.
No, I'm with you. Lewis Riddick's fantastic, and that's why I kept going back and forth. I was struggling. Okay, what should I watch here? And then, you know, Kelsey was great on the Manning cast. Russell Wilson was fabulous at the end of the fourth quarter and then to the overtime. And like you, but I like to hear what Lewis Riddick has to say. I have zero interest in what Brian Greasy has to say because he doesn't really have anything to say. And so I was, you know, going back and forth, but both the Mannings and Russell Wilson were calling out exactly what the Ravens were doing and what they were going to do on that final play that led to a touchdown. You saw their defensive backs collide, and that's why the guy got so wide open. But it was such a weird, I mean, they thought the game was over. Everyone's out there shaking hands. And then they have to come back on the field, and the Raiders puke all over themselves and have a penalty, and then throw the interception. But then the Ravens, like Lamar Jackson, it's like a weird vibe to him. Like it's like not everyone came back on the field to play. It's like some guys had their heads back in the game. The other guys had already checked out and got on the bus after they thought they lost and the game was over the first time. That was one of the more bizarre endings to a game that I've seen.
It was an extremely bizarre ending because, you know, you think you won it. I thought he was down short when it happened, just watching it, right, on the big play. But you're going to celebrate anyway because they ruled it a touchdown on the field, and you got to come back out, to your point, and then, of course, the interception, and then you're like, I mean, I'm enjoying it. Hearing City going, okay, the Raiders are going to Raider this one away, right? Like, all of a sudden, like, Baltimore's going to come back. And then, you know, it didn't happen. And it was a really bizarre ending to a game, for sure, because it was, you know, a game of emotional swings back and forth and stuff. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, it was a fun game to watch for the most part, but an entertaining game. But it was certainly a bizarre ending.
Okay, so let's spin it forward. Despite the fact that Travis Kelce was stunned to learn this, the Chiefs do play the Ravens this coming weekend. And I don't know if did you hear that, Mark? That he was.
I did not hear that. Myself.
Oh well, let's play for the people that happened to miss that. So Travis Kelce was one of the guests, and that was one of the cool part of the Manning cast. So they had the different players stepping in, former players, as guest commentators. And like I said, Russell Wilson was just, if that was an audition for what he's going to do after he's done playing, then he aced it because he was terrific in his analysis. And then you had Travis Kelce there, and Kelce was talking about facing the Raiders and the Ravens in the future.
It's a signals, looking for calls. Tell us kind of what you
mean. Yeah, especially if it's a divisional game or if it's a game we got coming up where we play the Raiders obviously twice a year, and then we're playing Baltimore here soon. So, I mean, I'm looking at everything. I'm trying not to, you know, get too technical with it just because we got the Chargers, I believe, this week. Actually, I don't even know. I think we might even play Baltimore next week. I'm lost. I'm lost in the season already.
I can tell you're real worried about.
There you go, Mark Bowrich. Yourself.
They do play the Chargers week three, so he's got, he's got a rough idea.
He's in the ballpark. What's wrong with that?
So they do play the Ravens, and watching that game, after considering the injuries that the Ravens suffered through the course of training camp and then watching them play at the Raiders last night, what's your takeaway on what the Chiefs are going to be walking into this coming weekend?
I wasn't overly impressed with the Ravens for the most part. Now, I think we need to be real about where they are as a team, right? This team has dramatically changed in the last 3 weeks with all the injuries they've had. And, you know, that offense around Lamar Jackson is built on running the football, and who's the top two running backs in Dobbins and I can't remember the other guy's name.
Gus Edwards.
My head right now. Gus Edwards, yes, thank you. Who did a fantastic job a year ago, really a two-headed monster. Right? Both those guys are right around 1,000 yards running the ball. They've got some big-name guys that are in there. I say big name, but familiar names, and Latavius Murray and of course, Le'Veon Bell's on the practice squad and a couple other guys. It's, you know, they're a team that's trying to put it all together right now. And when I say put it all together, just trying to get by because a lot of this, you know, happened within the last week. And so, you know, you're depleted because of injuries. And, you know, I just don't see anything changing. I watched that course of that game, especially early on, and I got to think, and we've seen this with Wink Martindale as their defensive coordinator. He's trying to bring pressure against Patrick Mahomes, and they've absolutely burned him. And most teams, you know, are going to get burned by Mahomes and Kelsey and Hill at some point also. But they cannot have the same game plan going in defensively that they had last night in order to play the Chiefs on Sunday night. And I think, you know, this is a tremendous opportunity for the Chiefs to go and continue to have the Ravens' number. But it's a depleted team, and now, of course, anything can happen Sunday night, and they can get some things figured out and decide, you know, that they want to change kind of what they're going to do specifically defensively. But you know, if the Ravens come out and play like that on Sunday night, the Chiefs are gonna stomp them.
Mark Boerichter is our guest. Mark, we were talking getting back to the Chiefs and what happened against the Cleveland Browns. We were talking about the snap counts for the wide receivers, and because you know, a lot of talk in the off season was about who's going to step up and replace Sammy Watkins, and so most of the focus, of course, has been on Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle. Were you surprised at all at the snap counts between those three? DeMarcus Robinson was out there for 74% of the snaps, 48 snaps. Mecole Hardman, 45 snaps. But Pringle, only 11 snaps.
I was surprised a little bit that Byron Pringle didn't get more run on Sunday. I really was. Now, that's not to say he's not going to throughout the course of the year. But I'll go back to this, that, you know, Byron Pringle has made, in my opinion, the most of his opportunities. When giving them. And, you know, I think there's a piece there for me that, guys, if you want to call him the, you know, really the number three or four wide receiver, however you want to look at it, I think it's going to be wide receiver two by committee for this team throughout the course of the year. I think you're going to see it vary from week to week. And I also think that, you know, Byron Pringle knows every single receiver position, and sometimes when that's the case, that you're a little more valuable with 13 to 15 snaps a game, because if something happens to Tyreek or something happens to one of the other guys, they can plug you in. And, you know, it's going to vary week by week a lot of times, especially when you don't have a clear-cut number two. And again, I'll say this, you know, Kelsey and Tyreek Hill are obviously 1-2 on this team, right? Those are your top two receiving options. So then from there, it's by committee. And I think they're okay with that. I think it's going to vary week to week on what they feel matchup-wise they've got. I think maybe they went, you know, possibly with just a little more speed, thinking they had a little more speed on Sunday against the Browns, and felt that was their best, you know, opportunity to win the game. But I would expect his role to increase as the year goes on. For sure.
Were you surprised at all that the two young tight ends didn't really get any run?
No. I'll tell you what, Nate. I was surprised actually looking at the snap counts after the game, because I thought they both played more than what they did on Sunday out of the game. Because there was a couple times, I think Kelsey played like, what, 85% of the snaps, I think, offensively. There was a couple times in the game where she had the ball down on the 30-yard line or in some key kind of third down spots, I thought that they took Kelsey off the field, actually. And I was surprised about that. But, you know, looking back on it, I guess I'm not as surprised now, you know, looking at it, just based on the fact it was hot out there, right? Not high 80s, low 90s on the field. And, and try to give, you know, Travis Kelce pick and choose a couple spots to give him a little bit of rest. But I wasn't overly surprised because, you know, you never know. They might come out this week and run their, quote, T-Rex, you know, personnel, right, with all four tight ends at some point and get those guys a lot more snaps. You know, Andy Reid's going to mix and match throughout the course of the season. We've seen that. And sometimes it can be baffling to us when we watch the game going, wow, they're back into a bunch of three tight end sets here. What are they doing? But everything that Andy Reid does from an offensive standpoint has a plan. And usually week one, he's really, really good. And I thought the offense played well as a whole. And they're putting stuff on tape week one to set up things for week two, three, four, five, and six. And I think we got to, you know, kind of be patient and understand that.
Mark Boerichter is our guest, right, Mark? You obviously have been on an NFL sideline, and so you can give us your perspective about what happened between Cleveland safety Ronnie Harrison Jr. and Chiefs assistant coach Greg Lewis. And so Cleveland Browns center and also NFLPA president J.C. Treader says that he thinks that Lewis needs to be held accountable by the league for his actions. He said, I expect that the coach gets held to the same standard, if not a higher standard, being the first one in there and being a coach, putting his hands on an opposing player. I don't think there's any room for that in the league. Well, that's one version of the story. The version that of the story that actually took place, and again, watching the video again, is Harrison's over there. He's in the middle of everything. He's stepping on Clyde Edwards-Helaire as Helaire's on the ground, and were they both shoves? Yes. But to me, they were very different. Lewis put the forearm on him and was pushing him off, getting him off of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, standing on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And Harrison shoved him in the throat. Just knocked his headset off. And it was, am I a Chiefs fan? Yes. Am I biased? Yes. But it looked different. It was different. And they're trying to say, well, Lewis, you know, he was first, and so the guy that goes first never gets caught. It's the guy that retaliates. Well, did he actually do the first thing, or was, you know, we're just forgetting that Harrison was stepping on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Greg Lewis is trying to protect his guy? He's probably going to get fined. Andy Reid might say something to him, but give me your perspective on what took place there, because it did end with Ronnie Harrison Jr. being ejected from the game.
Well, I think you got to look at the sum of all the parts, right, in these situations. And it happens on the Chiefs sideline, number one. So naturally, there's going to be a crowd of guys, you know, protecting your own player. And when I say protecting your own player, or just jumping in to help your own player up, first of all, okay? Whether he's, you know, got a cleat in his stomach or his chest area or not, you know, you see that all the time and at every single level of sport. A football where, you know, if something happens on the sideline, you got a bunch of guys running around to your own player to help him up. Let's also keep in mind, Greg Lewis is now the running backs coach, right, for this team. That's his position. So it's not like he is, you know, he used to be the wide receivers coach, but it's not like it's the linebackers coach coming in there. And they saw what was going on. And I think both guys are at fault, Stephen. I do. I think, you know, Greg Lewis, looking back, probably, you know, should have just focused on grabbing Clyde Edwards-Helaire and trying to get him up, as opposed to, you know, putting a forearm on the defender. Now, that being said, Harrison was much more egregious. It was almost a throat punch, in a sense, to me, is kind of what it looked like, right, as opposed to a shove. I mean, it was a much more violent strike. And I think, ultimately, Greg Lewis will be held accountable by the league with a fine as well. And obviously, you know, the player got ejected, and he should have got ejected. That's something they're cracking down on. It was not just a shove. It was more of an open-handed punch. And, you know, he's gonna get fined, and we're just going to move on. I think that's ultimately what needs at this point. I mean, I can tell you this, guys, that I think it was back in 2005. We were playing in Buffalo, and I got tackled after making a catch, and the defensive back continue to twist my ankle, and I turned around and did similar to what the Browns player did on Sunday, and
to the chest area of the Buffalo defender, and I got fined for unnecessary roughness for it. And really, you know, it was my reaction to my own safety as a player. So I think, you know, ultimately what's going to happen, there's not going to be really much other discipline happening other than fines because the player was ejected. I'm sure Greg Lewis will get a fine, and everybody will learn from it and move on.
We're visiting with Mark Boerichter. Mark, before we let you go, you mentioned overreactions to week one. Do you have any yourself? Like anything maybe that stood out from you from these other games, particularly in the AFC, that you want to overreact to for us?
Well, I think from the Chiefs' standpoint, the first half, I was like, this defense isn't very good.
Right.
It's near as good as we thought it was. But, you know, they got settled down and you know, got back to where they needed to go and play. And obviously, you know, Patrick Mahomes, the ultimate equalizer on things. So I'm not overreacting. I think the one thing I think with the Chiefs defense is they've got to continue, and this is going to be the narrative all year, and it's kind of been a question mark is, you know, is Frank Clark out? Can they get a consistent pass rush from somebody other than Chris Jones? That's going to be a key for them throughout the course of the year. I know they're missing Tyrann Mathieu in the secondary. But then around the league, too, you know, I think the Packers lost to the Saints. You know, I'm sure everybody in Green Bay is looking at it going, okay, well, Aaron Rodgers stayed away the entire offseason. You know, they didn't look good at all. But then, you know, when I got home Sunday night, I saw that Jameis Winston threw for 5 touchdowns, and I was like, wow. What? I mean, then he only threw for like 150 yards, right? So, and he played well. But I think, you know, those are kind of the overreactions. There's 5 touchdowns for Jameis Winston. Okay, Jameis Winston has asserted himself as the Saints quarterback. He's on this pace to potentially have a Pro Bowl season. Well, not yardage-wise. He certainly isn't yet. So those are just a couple of examples, you know, week one of a few things that I saw, you know, in terms of around the league. I just think you're going to see teams come back down to earth. Week one is always kind of a toss-up in a lot of ways. Usually the better team wins, but sometimes you just come out and don't play well week one. And you can look really, really bad. And part of it just can be the game plan you had going in. And it's not necessarily the coach's fault. It's just, hey, we thought this is what we were going to see and what was going to happen, and it just didn't, or we didn't execute. And so, you know, about week four is when you can really kind of start looking at some teams and their identities. Over the course of the year.
Mark Boerichter has been our guest. Mark, what's the score going to be between the Chiefs and the Ravens on Sunday night?
I think the Chiefs 31. I think the Ravens, I'll go Ravens 17.
31?
I think it's going to be a blowout. I really do. I know it's on the road. It's a Sunday night. But, again, that Ravens team, and they may figure some things out before Sunday, but I was not overly impressed last night, specifically on the defensive side for Baltimore last night.
31-17 Chiefs on Sunday night.
That's what I got.
Mark Boerichter, thank you for your time.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boerichter. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.